I'm a little bit of an outlier in this group. I'm a non-profiteer, and my organization is an active transportation advocacy organization. We promote biking, walking, public transportation, formerly known as the Crazy Bike People, but we are we're making strides and becoming a little bit more mainstream. So what I'm here to talk about today is Chicago's Play Streets program. This is more of a strategy right now than it is a policy per se, but we're working toward kind of a policy change, so it's a proof of concept at the moment, so we're hoping to get kind of a more formalized policy change coming up soon. So in brief, play streets are temporary street closures where we promote play in the street, literally. If you're familiar with the Ciclovia movement or the open streets movement, where miles and miles of streets are closed to automobile traffic and opened up to physically active stuff, biking, walking, playing. It's a miniature version of that on a block level scale. Play Streets has kind of experienced this renaissance of late, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history, but there are a handful of cities, Seattle, San Francisco, New York City have been doing it for many, many, many years, Chicago, who have are experiencing kind of a Play Streets renaissance. They're starting these Play Streets programs that have a history back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. But some of the common elements between all of these programs, and they do vary location to location based on local culture and stuff like that, but they're essentially held on low-volume residential roads that don't have any transit routes on them. Many of them don't have street parking. They have as few complications as possible that would impact the ability to close down a road. The closures can be episodic or recurring, so it can be every Wednesday from 2 to 5 p.m., from May to October, or it can be once a month here and once a month there. It's a mixture of structured play activity and free play. They are typically community-driven and community-flavored, and there is a permitting process usually required to actually close down that street with the jurisdictional authority, whoever owns that roadway. Also, in this kind of renaissance of play streets that we're experiencing, there seem to be a variety of motivations. Some of the time it's health, getting kids physically active, but sometimes it's a transportation focus where we want to build more of a culture around walking and biking, kind of that calming down traffic for a day or an afternoon and shutting down traffic on the local road. Open space and playmaking, especially where there are park deserts or a lack of green space or recreation space available. And then, you know, community to community, there can be other motivations, including enhancing crime prevention, some other stuff like that. So let's go back in time and talk about play streets and where they come from. Before the era of the automobile, in the 1800s, mid-1800s and prior to that, streets were kind of seen as a people space and not a vehicle space. They were kind of essentially an extension of the front yard. People came out of their buildings, especially in dense urban areas, went into the streets to do commerce, to play, to recreate, to socialize, and kids played in and around, safely or not, around all these different things, right? So it was kind of chaotic, but it was normalized that people would be in the street. That was a normal place for people to be. But then as the Industrial Revolution came along and mass urbanization, people flocking into cities, both in Europe and in the United States, we have this densification, right, of urban cores, a lot of low-income and immigrant populations moving into quote-unquote slums, and prioritization of who gets to use the street changed rapidly. It became a tool of commerce. It was to promote business and services and goods moving about the cities. And people being in the street were in the way now. We're having like this kind of blood in the streets, tons of crashes, kids being crushed under cartwheels. This is still prior to automobiles, right? Kids were blamed for startling horses and creating stampedes and blocking throughput. So in the early 1800s in England, the Highway Act, for the first time, criminalized play. So, you want to talk about engineering physical activity out of our kids' lives. This was one way to do it for sure. It actually defined a lot of the rules and regulations around road usage for vehicles, you know, which side of the street to drive on, that you could not abandon your horse and buggy in the middle of an intersection and just walk away, stuff like that. But it also made it illegal for children to play football in the street, which is, of course, soccer in the UK. And that was widely interpreted as it was illegal to do anything, for kids to play anything, do anything in the street. And unfortunately, it was enforced. In one year, one of the first years that this act was in place, 44 kids were imprisoned. Children were imprisoned in a single year for failure to pay fines for this infraction. And by 1935, over 2,000 kids had been prosecuted in England for playing in the street. Pretty horrific, right? Meanwhile, in the U.S., similar stuff was happening. Again, mid-1800s, we have these large influxes of immigrants into mainly New York City, but a lot of other places as well. And that contributed to, I don't have to tell people in the public health world, the conditions of poor hygiene and disease and some other stuff coming into play. And so kids, ragamuffins who were playing in the street were, this was kind of, it was associated with urban slums and poor kids and dirt and grime and crime and delinquency. So it took on this moniker of being a negative activity, right? And so, as evidenced in these quotes here, Teddy Roosevelt apparently believed that crowded sections of the city where kids were playing in the street were apt to be schools of crime. And the New York Times believes that all kids were becoming quickly communized, apparently. So, red propaganda, whatever. Right? So, the social social reformers came up with this idea of parks and playgrounds and green spaces. And so, if we're not going to be able to have kids in the streets anymore, we need to have a space for them to be. It's the only the right thing to do. It's justice related, which is great. But in practicality, it didn't work out very well because there literally wasn't enough space to designate. For parks and playgrounds, it was practically impossible. It was very expensive, and poor areas obviously are going to be the ones that are going to pay the price. They got very few parks and playgrounds, so kids were still left with nowhere to play, and there really were a lot of pedestrian deaths and stuff, especially with the rise of the automobile. This cemented it. It was an absolutely done deal with automobiles taking over prioritization of the streets. And we saw this play out in other ways with criminalization of pedestrians, with jaywalking, which is complete baloney. It was a complete fabrication of the auto industry to criminalize people, human beings, being able to use the roadway for their own purposes. So playing in the streets, done, right? So around this time, early 1900s, Play Streets is born. In New York City, there was a police commissioner who was a great friend of the poor, apparently. He had great sympathy and empathy for poverty-stricken neighborhoods. And they came up with the idea of creating the Police Athletic League, which would help, you know, give kids something positive to do. And the Police Athletic League created the first Play Streets pilot program. They closed 29 blocks, and they were closed every day. I believe it was just in the summer months, but every day from like every afternoon except for Sunday to play. And that program is the only program in that I'm aware of in the world that has been contiguous. It has continued ever since. It's always been a hallmark, a standard opportunity in New York City to close your streets as a play street. Similar initiatives happened in Chicago and Boston, a couple of other places, but I wasn't able to find through my research any kind of thread that showed that they continued or kind of how they grew or were killed off. England picked it up in the 1930s, and it really peaked in the 50s, but died out a little bit in the 80s, but was an inspiration for, if you've ever traveled in Europe, seeing these home zones, blocks or neighborhoods where traffic is highly calmed, and the pedestrian is the hierarchical user at the top of the pyramid, and they get the first consideration when roads are being used. So cars have to drive 2 to 5 miles an hour. Tough, right? So again, flash forward to the last 5 or 10 years, and we've had this renaissance in the Play Streets movement. Typically, these are being sponsored and brought about by city agencies. They have moved beyond kind of that strictly urban core solution to lack of green space, and they're being seen more and more in more suburbanized areas. In 2013, the Partnership for Healthy America, Michelle Obama's organization, and Blue Cross Blue Shield funded 10 pilot programs around the country, and we were one of them. Chicago was one of them. So a little bit about Chicago's Play Streets program. It started in 2012. We have just concluded our 5th successful cycle. The numbers are still coming in from this current year, but we've had about 65,000 participants, adults and children, probably more like 40 different community areas served, and 450, I'm going to guess, is probably where we're going to end up with events, unique events that happened. It's a program of the Chicago Department of Public Health, which is a little unusual. In Seattle, it's the DOT. In San Francisco, it's the Department of Transportation. Here, it's our Department of Public Health, who saw this as primarily a physical activity encouragement program. However, you'll see in just another minute or two from the slide, the actual impacts have been just all over the place and really, really exciting. The way that Chicago does it is not, the more typical way to do Play Streets is an open permit process, so any city resident can apply to host a Play Streets. They just have to, you know, check a few boxes. It's like a lot like a block party permit, right? In Chicago, it's done through a team of technical assistance providers. We are one of them, World Sports Chicago, LISC Chicago. We put together this team of different folks, and we receive a contract every year, and then we pass the money back through to community-based organizations who get a small grant of $5,000 to host X number of Play Streets for us, usually 7 or 8, and they get $1,000 stipend in play equipment that we order for them. The goals for the communities include to build their capacity to be able to put on Play Streets events so that they can continue to do them in the future. And only communities with high rates of obesity or overweight and or low park access are eligible. So it's a little bit more kind of proscriptive top down in Chicago for the time being, but we have designs on getting to the DIY model at some point. The events actually have to meet quite specific criteria. It's not enforced terribly strictly as much, but they need to be 3 hours long on a closed residential street, free and open to all residents. 150 folks is the target participation level. They have to have at least 5 different physical activity options for kids. They have to appeal to a wide range of ages and gender, both genders. Adult participation and parent participation are prioritized. And then they have to display promotional materials. And this was came after a couple of years. Any snacks that are provided need to be healthy. I took a lot of pictures of kids with chip bags in their hands that was not pleasing to DPH. So, you know, what we do as technical assistance providers, we walk the CBOs through these steps of identifying a good location, the permitting process, coordinating with the different city agencies, which is a bit of a hang up for us because, you know, to put up no parking signs, you have to talk to Streets and Sanitation. To get the street swept, you have to talk to somebody else. To get the permit to close the street, you have to talk to the alderman. To get the police to come, you have yada, yada, yada. So it's a lot of, you know, chasing herding cats, and we hope to improve that in the future. Training and recruiting volunteers. And one thing that we do is we bring in the organization called PlayWorks. Is anybody familiar with PlayWorks? We bring them in to trade our CBOs on how to do group play with kids on the block. I would love to be able to tell you we have this great, robust evaluation to share with you, but we do not. We attempted to do the SOPLAY assessment in the early years, and it was really difficult, very time intensive and labor intensive, and we didn't really have the funds to do it well. So we kind of moved away from that. And we've done a few intercept surveys, but what I really want to share with you are these unexpected community benefits that our CBOs have told us about. They're like, you know, the physical activity is great to see the kids out there playing and moving and, you know, and stuff. But I'll tell you what, the thing they tell us the most that they've appreciated about Play Streets is the crime prevention impacts. And these are perceptions. We haven't backed this up with data or anything like that. But, you know, they're telling us things like, you know, the guys that stand on the corner, when we flyer the entire block that a Play Streets is happening, the guys that stand on the corner, they aren't there that day. They decide not to stand there. As a matter of fact, they bring their kids, and we see them playing and jumping rope and doing stuff. There's something about play. There's something essential about play that feels like it's deserved. And play streets are respected in a way that other community activities are not. This is what our CBOs are telling us, you know. They say, well, you know, we have parties, we shut down streets and have barbecues and stuff, and, you know, we still have some iffy moments, but play streets, it's usually pretty good. Bringing food to the kids over the summer, you know, kids are out of school, the free lunch program is not available to them. We are able to bring in the Catholic Charities food truck to our play streets events, and kids are getting fed, especially with fruits and vegetables. The CBOs are talking about things like pay it forward opportunities. They're taking their tiny little $5,000 grant and they're carving out $500 to give to other little local partners, you know, to bring them in the fold and help them sustain themselves over the summer. Youth leadership development. A lot of these CBOs are bringing in the local youth and they're partnering with the Chicago Youth Program, the Chicago Youth Summer Employment Program, and hiring kids through that to work at Play Streets. And then the last thing is that a lot of these CBOs employ school year hourly wage folks, particularly for the Safe Passages program, which is another CPS program, and they are unable to sustain them usually through the summer, and those folks kind of fall off the radar, they lose their jobs, they struggle over the summer with income, and they're able to pay their folks to work on Play Streets. So it's just really, really warm and fuzzy and awesome. So again, some of the things we're looking to improve for the future, we want to have this single permitting process that triggers the street closure, that triggers the barricades being dropped off, that triggers the no parking signs going up and street sweeping, and notifies the police so that they can come. Yeah. By the way, this is the police commander, double-dutching, just FYI. We also want to create a do-it-yourself model for communities that are not on hard times, that are, you know, more affluent communities, that they can just permit and do their own play streets, and they don't need any technical assistance, right? It should be able to happen everywhere. And finally, we're hoping that the Department of Public Health will kind of broaden the vision of play streets beyond just the physical activity goals and talk about it in terms of violence prevention and calming traffic and reducing crashes. Couple of resources. New York City really has the most robust program. Once again, they have a really nice guide and some case studies. You can go to transportationalternatives.org. Chicago's Play Streets website is playstreetschicago.org, and there's a nice little video there with some testimonials from CBOs. And then Partnership for Healthier America. Again, they did a pilot project, and I think they have some materials on their website. That's all I got. Go play in the street. And I'm going to leave this slide up here because as long as a presentation file is open, the recording will continue. So we'll leave it here for Q&A.
Great. And that's just what we have time for, is a few questions for any of our speakers. Yes, please.
So, I wonder if I should.
Yeah, why don't you please? That'd be great. Yes, please. Why don't you restate the question too, please?
So the question was how the Chicago Park District and Friends of the Park got the word out on the application project or on the application process for the Chicago Plays Initiative. And they did it in a number of ways. They started by contacting all the aldermen in the city and letting them know about the application process so that they could then diffuse the information in the community and reach out to local community groups that they were aware of. But then they also held informational meetings across the city at different times so that they could also then invite community members to come and listen to the initiative and all the different components of the application process. And obviously, the Chicago Park District has a number of ways that they connect with their Park Advisory Council, so they also reached out to the Park Advisory Council that way. So it was through a few different avenues, so that anyone, in the community who might be interested in applying would be able to find out about it.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is a question for Melody. My name is Susan Zeep. I'm from San Francisco, so a lot of that we have. I'm evaluating our Play Streets pilot, which unfortunately had one season. I wonder if you could just talk for a minute about sustainability. How good is your program giving to the community, and then how have they been able to pay for this and have so many events?
Great. So the question was about sustainability. How has our program been able to kind of pay it forward and build capacity in the community so that they can continue to do the program? I'll tell you that it may not have direct impact on building capacity for Play Streets in particular, but it has enhanced these community-based organizations' other activities. So they're a lot of them are after-school providers. A lot of them are, immigration centers. Some of them are violence prevention. Some of them are, treating victims of domestic violence, all that kind of stuff. And they're incorporating these elements of play and moving them into others. So I'd say that's probably the biggest capacity building. Again, I think what we're trying to do is the technical assistance provider team is trying to move, encourage the Department of Public Health to move beyond this direct delivery kind of process where it's really limiting the number of communities that we can help and build a do-it-yourself guidebook, do a single training, invite anybody who wants to come on how to do Play Streets and then let them go. Stuff like that. So that's really the opportunity that presents itself. We haven't gotten there yet. New York City has been doing it for 100 years.
Yes, please, in the back.
My name is Robert Zarr. I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm a pediatrician by day, and also in some circles I'm known as Nature Doc. I promote the park prescription program. My question is for all of you. I came in a little bit late, so I'm sorry if I missed part of the presentation, but there was mention of connecting with departments of health, transportation, parks and rec, et cetera, which is fantastic. It's been the same in D.C. Has there been any of your work on the panel? Has there been buy-in or interest, and maybe even collaboration from the medical side or the provider community in Chicago? For any of the work that you do, not talking just that part of the prescription, but in any of your work.
So just to repeat the question is, for any of the panelists, are there collaborations with the medical side, with the pediatricians and healthcare?
I will say first of all, the insurance companies are in. You saw Blue Cross and Blue Shield's logo. They fund Open Street, Play Streets. They've done a lot of, provided a lot of funding. If you see Divvy Bikes around the city, Blue Cross and Blue Shield is featured prominently there. They funded that program to a huge extent.
I have free 24-hour passes for Divvy.
so that side for sure. In terms of the medical community health providers, I would say not quite on a systematic level. However, the city of Chicago, the health department has a public health agenda called Healthy Chicago, and they're right now in the Healthy Chicago 2.0 development, the second iteration of that plan. And they have partnered with an organization here called Health and Disability Advocates to coordinate all of the Chicago hospitals around their community health improvement, their community health needs assessments. So nonprofit hospitals now across the country are required to do a community health needs assessment and then develop an implementation plan to show that they're doing things to protect the health of their communities, because they're increasingly being held accountable for that. The physical activity strategies that are in the Healthy Chicago 2.0 agenda are being considered by this coalition of hospitals, and they're thinking about collective impact and the ways that they can leverage their resources, put them together to start advancing some of these things. But I would say, so there's a lot of examples of individual hospital systems and pediatric practices and, you know, other kinds of healthcare providers that are certainly engaged in CLOC, that are bike advocates, that are, you know, you find them everywhere, that have testified before the Board of Education. But in terms of that systematic level, I think we're now going to see it with the community health needs assessment process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
I have a question for Abby. You mentioned that there were some challenges with getting a policy passed. I wonder if you could just talk about those challenges and how you discussed
them. I'm trying to repeat the question.
Sure. So the question is about challenges with getting our physical education policy in particular passed. So yes, absolutely. As you probably can imagine, it's a fairly political environment in the Board of Chicago. And physical education is not necessarily top of mind of all the very many and serious problems that exist in CPS. And that is why we really leaned on our partners, such as CLOC, to create that groundswell of outside pressure, if you will. And then everyone was just very particular about our implementation strategy. So we had to get all of our ducks really in a row about, okay, if we do pass this policy, how are we going to, you know, make sure schools are implementing with fidelity, especially since there is a lot of challenges there. So in terms of staffing, in terms of space, and we're still experiencing some of those hurdles. So I mentioned the action plan that we kind of enveloped into the policy to help support schools, that our office is there to really support schools in implementing this policy, was a huge factor for helping getting it passed, because they didn't want to just pass some unfunded mandate again, which it is, in CPS, and then have it just kind of die on the vine. They wanted to make sure that we were providing schools supports and resources to actually implement. Do you want to add anything to that, Jamie? Or Jamie was really involved with the process as well of implementing the policy.
I want to add something, and it's not just because CPS is in the room, but it was, I think the openness that they had to talking to the advocacy community was really critical, because from the outsider's perspective, you know, there's always a range of interests, and we had some partners who actually felt like what was developing wasn't strong enough, and they had the ability to actually kind of back channel and undermine what CPS was trying to do. And I think the system being really open to hearing and being willing to negotiate and compromise and also explain why maybe some of the ideals that some organizations had just weren't going to be feasible in the district, helped to make sure that by the time the policy was ready to go before the board, everybody was on board, everybody had aired their concerns, everybody felt, you know, confident that CPS was going to, you know, really laud and champion this. They weren't just going to pass it and move on. So I want to make sure to note that their openness to the nonprofit and advocacy sector was really crucial.
I have just a detail question. Did they need to hire more PE teachers?
Yes, absolutely. It's a great time to be a PE teacher. Oh, I'm sorry. So the question was, do we, CPS, need to hire additional PE teachers to support implementation of the policy? So yes, in a nutshell, it's a great time to be a PE teacher. If you know anyone who's looking to be a PE teacher in Chicago Public Schools, we need teachers. We were able to use some of the TIF funding from the mayor to support 82, right, positions at the high school level. And we chose high school because that was the immediate impact. High schools were kind of going from 0 to 60, while elementary schools had like 3 years to get up to full implementation. So that's always the challenge, and we directly went out and met with administrators, parent groups, all kinds of people to talk about all of these challenges, basically, of staffing, and we're really looking to support teachers gaining additional endorsements. We're hoping to develop a cohort of health education, PE education endorsement programs with our higher ed community and things like that. But definitely, yes, a great time to be a PE teacher in Chicago.
Any last questions? I think we'll wrap this up. Good. And our panelists will be here for a couple more minutes? Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Great session. Thanks.